Chapter 8. Hard Heads. Elaine was not certain Rand realized she was still in the room, the way he stared after Egwene with a half-bewildered expression. Now and again he shook his head as if arguing with himself or trying to straighten his mind. She was content to wait him out. Anything that put off the moment a while longer. She concentrated on maintaining an outward composure, back straight and head high, hands folded in her lap, a calmness on her face that could have rivaled Moiraine's best. Butterflies the size of hedgehogs frolicked in her stomach. It was not fear of him channeling. She had let go of Sidar as soon as Egwene stood to leave. She wanted to trust him, and she had to. It was what she wanted to happen that had her trembling inside. She had to concentrate not to finger her necklace or fiddle with the strand of sapphires in her hair. Was her perfume too heavy? No. Egwene said he liked the smell of roses. The dress. She wanted to tug it up, but... He turned. The slight limp in his step tightened her lips thoughtfully, saw her sitting in her chair, and gave a start, eyes widening with what seemed very close to panic. She was glad to see it. The effort of keeping her own face serene had leaped tenfold as soon as his eyes touched her. Those eyes were blue now, like a misty morning sky. He recovered on the instant and made a quite unnecessary bow, wiping his hands once nervously on his coat. "I did not realize you were still..." Flushing, he cut off, forgetting her presence might be taken as an insult. "I mean, I didn't... That is, I..." He took a deep breath and began again. "I am not as much of a fool as I sound, my lady. It isn't every day someone tells you they don't love you, my lady." She put on a tone of mock severity. "If you call me that again, I shall call you my Lord Dragon, and curtsy. Even the Queen of Andor might curtsy to you, and I'm only daughter heir." "Light, don't do that." He seemed uneasy out of all proportion to the threat. "I will not, Rand," she said in a more serious voice. "If you call me by my name, Elaine, say it." "Elaine." He spoke awkwardly, yet delightfully, as if he were savoring the name, too. "Good." It was absurd to be so pleased. All he had done was say her name, after all. There was something she had to know before she could go on. "Did it hurt you very much?" That could be taken two ways, she realized. "What Egwene told you, I mean." "No. Yes. Some. I don't know. Fair is fair, after all." His small grin took some of the edge off of his wariness. "I sound a fool again, don't I?"
"No, not to me."
"I told her the pure truth, but I don't think she believed me. I suppose I did not want to believe it of her either. Not really. If that isn't foolish, I don't know what is."
"If you tell me one more time that you are a fool, I may begin to believe it." "He won't try to hold on to her. I won't have to deal with that."
Her voice was calm, with a light enough tone to let him know she did not really mean what she said.
"I saw a Kyrianan lord's fool once, a man in a funny striped coat, too big for him and sewn with bells. You would look silly wearing bells."
"I suppose I would," he said ruefully. "I will remember that." His slow grin was wider this time, warming his whole face. The butterfly's wings flogged her for haste, but she occupied herself with straightening her skirts. She had to go slowly, carefully. "If I don't, he'll think I am just a foolish girl, and he will be right." The butterflies in her belly were beating kettle drums now. "Would you like a flower?" he asked suddenly, and she blinked in confusion.
"A flower?"
"Yes." Striding to the bed, he scooped up a double handful of feathers from the tattered mattress and held them out to her. "I made one for the Majira last night. You'd have thought I'd given her the stone. But yours will be much prettier," he added hastily. "Much prettier, I promise."
"Rand,
I will be careful. It takes only a trickle of the power. Just a thread, and I will be very careful."
Trust. She had to trust him. It was a small surprise to realize that she did. "I would like that, Rand."
For long moments he stared at the fluffy mound in his hands, a slow frown on his face. Abruptly he let the feathers fall, dusting his hands. Flowers, he said. That's no fit gift for you. Her heart went out to him. Clearly he had tried to embrace Sidene and failed. Masking disappointment in action, he limped hurriedly to the metallic cloth and began gathering it over his arm. Now this is a proper gift for the daughter heir of Andor. You could have a seamstress make... He floundered over what a seamstress might make from a 4-pace length of gold and silver cloth less than 2 feet wide.
I am sure a seamstress will have many ideas, she told him diplomatically.
Pulling a handkerchief from her sleeve, she knelt for a moment to collect the feathers he had dropped into the square of pale blue silk. The maids will take care of that, he said as she tucked the small bundle securely into her belt pouch.
Well, this bit is done.
How could he understand that she would keep the feathers because he had wanted them to be a flower? He shifted his feet, holding the glittering folds as if he did not know what to do with them.
The Majira must have seamstresses, she told him. I will give that to one of them.
He brightened, smiling. She saw no reason to tell him she meant it as a gift. Those thundering butterflies would not let her hold back any longer.
Rand, do you like me?
Like you? He frowned. Of course I like you. I like you very much.
Did he have to look as if he did not understand at all? I am fond of you, Rand.
She was startled that she said it so calmly. Her stomach seemed to be trying to writhe up into her throat, and her hands and feet felt like ice.
More than fond.
That was enough. She was not going to make a fool of herself.
He has to say more than like first.
She almost giggled hysterically. I will keep control of myself. I will not let him see me behave like a moon-eyed girl. I will not.
I am fond of you, he said slowly.
I am not usually so forward.
No, that might make him think of Berylane. There was red in his cheeks. He was thinking of Berylane. Burn him. Her voice came as smooth as silk.
Soon I will have to go, Rand, to leave Tyr. I may not see you again for months.
Or ever, a tiny voice cried in her head. She refused to listen.
I could not go without letting you know how I feel. And I am very fond of you.
Elaine, I am fond of you. I feel... I want...
The scarlet spots on his cheeks grew.
Elaine, I don't know what to say, how to...
Suddenly it was her face that was flaming. He must think she was trying to force him into saying more.
Aren't you?
The small voice mocked, which only made her cheeks hotter.
Rand, I'm not asking for...
Light, how to say it?
I only wanted you to know how I feel. That is all.
Berylane would not have let it go at that. Berylane would have been wrapped around him by now. Telling herself she would not let that half-dressed snip better her, she moved closer to him, took the glittering cloth from his arm, and dropped it on the carpet. For some reason he seemed taller than he ever had before.
Rand, I want you to kiss me.
There, it was out.
Kiss you?
He said, as if he had never heard of kissing before.
Elaine, I don't want to promise more than... I mean, it isn't as if we were betrothed. Not that I'm suggesting we should be. It's just that... I am fond of you, Elaine. More than fond. I just do not want you to think I...
She had to laugh at him, with all his confused earnestness.
I do not know how things are done in the Two Rivers, but in Camelin you don't wait until you are betrothed before kissing a girl, and it does not mean you must become betrothed either. But perhaps you do not know how.
His arms went around her almost roughly, and his lips came down on hers. Her head spun, her toes tried to curl up in her slippers. Sometime later, she was not certain how long, she realized she was leaning against his chest, knees trembling, trying to gulp air.
Forgive me for interrupting you,
he said. She was glad to hear a touch of breathlessness in his voice.
I am just a backward shepherd from the Two Rivers.
You are uncouth,
she murmured against his shirt.
And you did not shave this morning, but I would not say you are backward.
Elaine, I...
She put a hand over his mouth. I do not want to hear anything from you that you do not mean with your whole heart, she said firmly.
Not now or ever.
He nodded, not as if he understood why, but at least as if he understood that she meant what she said. Straightening her hair, the strand of sapphires was tangled beyond mending without a mirror. She stepped out of his encircling arms, not without reluctance. It would be all too easy to remain there, and she had already been more forward than she had ever dreamed of before. Speaking up like that, asking for a kiss. Asking. She was not Berylaine.
Berylaine.
Perhaps Min had had a viewing. What Min saw happened, but she would not share him with Berylaine. Perhaps she needed to do a bit more plain speaking. Obliquely plain, at least.
I expect you will not lack for company after I go. Just remember that some women see a man with their hearts, while others see no more than a bauble to wear, no different than a necklace or a bracelet. Remember that I will come back, and I am one who sees with her heart.
He looked confused at first, then a little alarmed. She had said too much too fast. She had to divert him.
Do you know what you have not said to me? You have not tried to frighten me away by telling me how dangerous you are. Don't try now. It is too late.
I did not think of it.
Another thought came to him, though, and his eyes crinkled with suspicion.
Did you and Egwene scheme this up between you?
She managed to combine wide-eyed innocence with mild outrage.
How could you even consider such a thing? Do you imagine we would hand you around between us like a package? You think a good deal of yourself. There is such a thing as being overproud.
He did look confused now. Quite satisfactory.
Are you sorry for what you did to us, Rand?
I did not mean to frighten you, he said hesitantly. Egwene made me angry. She's always been able to without half trying. That's no excuse, I know. I said I was sorry, and I am. Look what it got me. Burned tables and another mattress ruined.
And for the pinch?
His face reddened again, but he faced her firmly even so.
No. No, I am not sorry for that. The two of you talking over my head as if I were a lump of wood with no ears. You deserved as much, both of you, and I won't say different.
For a moment she considered him. He rubbed his arms through his coat sleeves as she momentarily embraced Sidar. She did not know healing to any degree, but she had learned bits and pieces on the edge of it. Channeling, she soothed away the hurt she had given him for the pinch. His eyes widened in surprise, and he shifted on his feet as if testing the absence of pain.
For being honest, she told him simply.
There was a rap at the door and Gaul looked in. At first the Aielman had his head down, but after a quick glance at them he raised it. Color flooded Elaine's face as she realized he had suspected that he might be interrupting something he should not see. She very nearly embraced Sidar again and taught him a lesson.
The Tyrans are here, Gaul said. The High Lords you were expecting.
I will go then, she told Rand. You must tell them about taxes, was it not? Think on what I have said.
She did not say, think of me, but she was sure the effect would be the same. He reached out as if to stop her, but she slipped away from him. She had no intention of putting on a display in front of Gaul. The man was Aiel, but what must he think of her, wearing perfume and sapphires at that hour of the morning? It required real effort not to pull the neckline of her dress up higher. The High Lords entered as she reached the door, a cluster of graying men in pointed beards and colorful, ornate coats with puffy sleeves. They crowded out of her way with reluctant bows, their bland faces and polite murmurs not hiding their relief that she was leaving. She glanced back once from the doorway. A tall, broad-shouldered young man in a plain green coat among the high lords in their silks and satin stripes. Rand looked like a stork among peacocks. Yet there was something about him, a presence that said he commanded there by right. The Tyrans recognized it, bending their stiff necks reluctantly. He thought probably they bowed just because he was the dragon reborn, and perhaps they thought so too. But she had seen men, like Gareth Bryn, the captain commander of her mother's guards, who could have dominated a room in rags, with no title and no one knowing their name. Rand might not know it, but he was such a man. He had not been when she first saw him, but he was now. She pulled the door shut behind her. The Aiel around the entrance glanced at her, and the captain commanding the ring of defenders in the middle of the anteroom stared uneasily, but she barely noticed them. It was done. Or at least, it was begun. 4 days she had before Joya and Amiko were put on that ship. 4 days at most to twine herself so firmly into Rand's thoughts that he had no room for Berylane. Or if not that, firmly enough that she stayed inside his head until she had the chance to do more. She had never thought she might do a thing like this, stalk a man like a huntress stalking a wild boar. The butterflies were still gambolling in her stomach. At least she had not let him see how nervous she was, and it occurred to her that she had not once thought of what her mother would say. With that, the flutterings vanished. She did not care what her mother said. Morghese had to accept her daughter as a woman. That was all there was to it. The Aiel bowed as she moved away, and she acknowledged them with a gracious nod that would have done Morghese proud. Even the Tyran captain looked at her as if he could see her new serenity. She did not think she would be troubled by butterflies again. For the Black Adja, perhaps, but not for Rand.
Ignoring the High Lords in their anxious semicircle, Rand watched the door close behind Elaine with wonder in his eyes. Dreams coming true, even only this much, made him uneasy. A swim in the Waterwood was one thing, but he would never have believed a dream or she came to him like this. She had been so cool and collected while he was tripping over his own tongue. And Egwene, giving his own thoughts back to him, and only concerned she might hurt him. Why was it women could go to pieces or fly into a rage at the smallest thing, yet never flicker an eyelash at what left you gaping? "My lord dragon," Suneman murmured even more diffidently than usual. Word of this morning must have spread through the stone already. That first lot had nearly run on their way out, and it was doubtful Torian would show his face or his filthy suggestions anywhere Rand was. Suneman essayed an ingratiating smile, then smothered it, dry-washing his plump hands when Rand only looked at him. The rest pretended they did not see the burned tables or the shattered mattress and scattered books or the half-melted lumps over the fireplace that had been the stag and wolves. High Lords were good at seeing only what they wanted to see. Carleon and Tadosian, false self-effacement in every line of their thick bodies, surely never realized there was anything suspicious in never looking at one another. But then, Rand might never have noticed, if not for Tom's note, found in the pocket of a coat just back from being brushed.
"The Lord Dragon wished to see us," Suneman managed.
Could Egwene and Elaine have worked it up between them? Of course not. Women did not do things like that any more than men. Did they? It had to be coincidence. Elaine heard that he was free and decided to speak. That was it. "Taxes," he barked. The Tyrans did not move, but they gave the impression of stepping back. How he hated dealing with these men. He wanted to dive back into the books.
"It is a bad precedent, my lord dragon, lowering taxes," a lean, gray-haired man said in an oily voice.
Mylon was tall for a Tyran, only a hand shorter than Rand, and hard as any defender. He held himself in a stoop in Rand's presence. His dark eyes showed how he hated it. But he had hated it when Rand told them to stop crouching around him, too. None of them straightened, but Mylon, especially, had not liked being reminded of what he did.
"The peasants have always paid easily, but if we lower taxes when the day comes that we raise them back to where they are now, the fools will complain as bitterly as if we had doubled the present levy. There may well be riots when that day comes, my lord dragon."
Rand strode across the room to stand before Kalandor. The crystal sword glittered, outshining the gilt and gemstones surrounding it. A reminder of who he was, of the power he could wield. Egwene. It was foolish to feel hurt because she said she no longer loved him. Why should he expect her to have feelings for him that he did not have for her? Yet it did hurt. A relief, but not a pleasant one. You will have riots if you drive men off their farms. Three books stood in a stack almost by Mylon's feet. The Treasures of the Stone of Tyr, Travels in the Waste, and Dealings with the Territory of Mayenne. The keys lay in those and in the various translations of the Kariathon cycle. If he could only find them and fit them to the proper locks. He pushed his mind back to the High Lords. Do you think they will watch their families starve and do nothing? The Defenders of the Stone have put down riots before, my Lord Dragon, Suniman said soothingly. Our own guards can keep peace in the countryside. The peasants will not disturb you, I give you my assurance. There are too many farmers as it is. Carleon flinched at Rand's glare. It is the civil war in Kyrian, my Lord Dragon, he explained hurriedly. The Kyrianen can buy no grain, and the granaries are bursting. This year's harvest will go to waste as it is. And next year? Burn my soul, my Lord Dragon. But what we need is for some of those peasants to stop their eternal digging and planting. He seemed to realize he had said too much, though he clearly did not understand why. Rand wondered whether he had any idea how food got to his table. Did he see anything but gold and power? What will you do when Carrion is buying grain again? Rand said coolly. For that matter, is Carrion the only land that needs grain? Why had Elaine spoken up like that? What did she expect of him? Fond, she said. Women could play games with words like Aes Sedai. Did she mean she loved him? No, that was plain foolishness. Overproud to a degree. My Lord Dragon, Mylon said, half subservient, half as if explaining something to a child. If the civil wars stopped today, Carrion still could not buy more than a few barge loads for 2, even 3 years. We have always sold our grain to Carrion. Always. For the 20 years since the Aiel War. They were so bound up in what they had always done that they could not see what was so simple, or would not see it. When the cabbages sprouted like weeds around Emmons Field, it was a near certainty that bad rain or white worm had struck Devon Ride or Watch Hill. When Watch Hill had too many turnips, Emmons Field would have a shortage or Devon Ride. Offer it in Ilion, he told them. What did Elaine expect? Or Altara. He did like her, but he liked Min as much, or thought he did. It was impossible to sort out his feelings for either of them. You have ships for the sea as well as river boats and barges, and if you don't have enough, hire them from Mayenne. He liked both women, but beyond that, he had spent very nearly his whole life mooning after Egwene. He was not about to dive into that again until he was sure. Sure of something. Sure. If dealings with the territory of Mayenne was to be believed, stop this, he told himself. Keep your mind on these weasels, or they'll find cracks to slip through and bite you on the way. Pay with grain. I'm sure the first will be amenable for a good price, and maybe a signed agreement, a treaty. That was a good word, the sort they used. Pledging to leave Mayenne alone in return for ships. He owed her that. We trade little with Ilion, my Lord Dragon. They are vultures and scum. Todosian sounded scandalized, and so did Mylon when he said, We have always dealt with Mayenne from strength, my Lord Dragon, never with bent knee. Rand took a deep breath. The High Lords tensed. It always came to this. He always tried to reason with them, and it always failed. Tom said the High Lords had heads as hard as the stone, and he was right. What do I feel for her? Dreaming about her? She's certainly pretty. He was not sure if he meant Elaine or Min. Stop this. A kiss means no more than a kiss. Stop it. Putting women firmly out of his head, he set himself to telling these stone-brained fools what they were going to do. First, you will cut taxes on farmers by 3/4, and on everyone else by 1/2. Don't argue. Just do it. Second, you go to Berylaine and ask her price for hiring. The High Lords listened with false smiles and grinding teeth, but they listened.
Egwene was considering Joya and Amiko when Matt fell in beside her, just walking down the hallway as if he merely happened to be going the same way. He was frowning to himself, and his hair needed brushing, as if he had been scrubbing his fingers through it. Once or twice he glanced at her but did not speak. The servants they passed bowed or curtsied, and so did the occasional high lords and ladies, if with markedly less enthusiasm. Matt's lip-curling stares at the nobles would have brought trouble if she had not been there, friend of the Lord Dragon or not. This silence was not like him, not like the Matt she knew. Except for his fine red coat, wrinkled as if he had slept in it, he seemed no different than the old Matt, yet they were surely all different now. His quiet was unsettling. "Is last night troubling you?" she asked at last. He missed a step. "You know about that? Well, you would, wouldn't you? Doesn't bother me. Wasn't much to it. Over and done with now, anyway." She pretended to believe him. "Nynaeve and I do not see much of you." That was a rank understatement. "I've been busy," he muttered with an uncomfortable shrug, looking everywhere but at her again. "Dicing?" she asked dismissively. "Cards." A plump maid, curtsying with her arms full of folded towels, glanced at Egwene, and apparently thinking she was not looking, winked at Matt. He grinned at her. "I've been busy playing cards." Egwene's eyebrows rose sharply. That woman had to be 10 years older than Nynaeve. "I see. It must use up a great deal of time, playing cards. Too much to spare a few moments for old friends." "The last time I spared you a moment, you and Nynaeve tied me up with the power like a pig for market, so you could rummage through my room. Friends don't steal from friends." He grimaced. "Besides, you're always with that Elaine with her nose in the air, or Moiraine. I do not like—" Clearing his throat, he shot her a sideways glance. "I don't like taking up your time. You are busy, from what I hear, questioning dark friends, doing all sorts of important things, I should imagine. You know these tyrants think you are Aes Sedai, don't you?" She shook her head ruefully. It was Aes Sedai he did not like. However much of the world Matt saw, nothing would ever change him. "It is not stealing to take back what was supposed to be a loan," she told him. "I don't remember you saying anything about a loan." "Ah, what use do I have for a letter from the Ammerlin? Just get me in trouble. You could have asked, though." She refrained from pointing out that they had asked. She wanted neither an argument nor a sulky departure. He would not call it that, of course. This time she would let him get away with his version. "Well, I'm glad you are still willing to talk to me. Was there a special reason for it today?" He shoved his fingers through his hair and muttered to himself. What he needed was his mother to haul him off by his ear for a long talking to. Egwene counseled herself to patience. She could be patient when she wanted to. She would not say a word before he did, if she burst for it. The corridor opened into a railed colonnade of white marble, looking down on one of the stone's few gardens. Large white blossoms covered a few small waxy-leafed trees and gave a scent even sweeter than the banks of red and yellow roses. A sullen breeze failed to stir the hangings on the inner wall, but it did cut the morning's growing damp warmth. Matt took a seat on the wide balustrade with his back against a column and 1 foot up in front of him. Peering down into the garden, he finally said, "I need some advice." He wanted advice from her? She goggled at him. "Whatever I can do to help," she said faintly. He turned his head to her, and she did her best to assume something like Aes Sedai calm. "What do you want advice about?" "I don't know." It was a 10-pace drop to the garden. Besides, there were men down there weeding among the roses. If she pushed him over, he might land on one. A gardener, not a rosebush. "How am I supposed to advise you, then?" she asked in a thin voice.
"I am trying to decide what to do."
He looked embarrassed. He had a right to, in her opinion.
"I hope you are not thinking of trying to leave. You know how important you are. You cannot run away from it, Matt."
"You think I don't know that? I don't think I could leave if Moiraine told me I could. Believe me, Egwene, I am not going anywhere. I just want to know what's going to happen." He gave a rough shake of his head, and his voice grew tighter. "What comes next? What's in these holes in my memory? There are chunks of my life that aren't even there. They don't exist as if they never happened. Why do I find myself spouting gibberish? People say it's the old tongue, but it's goose gabble to me. I want to know, Egwene. I have to know before I go as crazy as Rand."
"Rand is not crazy," she said automatically.
So Matt was not trying to run away. That was a pleasant surprise. He had not seemed to believe in responsibility. But there was pain and worry in his voice. Matt never worried, or never let anyone see it if he did.
"I do not know the answers, Matt," she said gently.
"Perhaps Moiraine..."
"No!" He was on his feet in a bound. "No, Aes Sedai! I mean, you're different. I know you, and you aren't... Didn't they teach you anything in the tower? Some trick or other, something that would serve?"
"Oh, Matt, I am sorry. I am so sorry." His laugh reminded her of their childhood. Just so he had always laughed when his grandest expectations went astray.
"Ah, well, I guess it does not matter. It'd still be the tower if at second hand. No offense to you."
Just so he had moaned over a splinter in his finger and treated a broken leg as if it were nothing at all.
"There might be a way," she said slowly. "If Moiraine says it is all right, she might."
"Moiraine? Haven't you heard a word I said? The last thing I want is Moiraine meddling."
"What way?"
Matt had always been rash, but he wanted no more than she did to know. If only he showed a little sense and caution for once. A passing Tyran noblewoman with dark braids coiled about her head, shoulders bare above yellow linen, bent her knee slightly, looking at them with no expression. She walked on quickly, with a stiff back. Egwene watched her until she was well beyond earshot and they were alone. Unless the gardeners, 30 feet below, counted. Matt was staring at her expectantly. In the end, she told him of the Turangrial, the twisted doorway that held answers on its other side. It was the dangers she emphasized, the consequences of foolish questions, or those touching the shadow, the dangers even Aes Sedai might not know. She was more than flattered that he had come to her, but he had to show a little sense.
"You must remember this, Matt. Frivolous questions can get you killed, so if you do use it, you will have to be serious for a change, and you mustn't ask any questions that touch the shadow."
He had listened with greater and greater incredulity. When she was done, he exclaimed, "Three questions? You go in like Billy, I suppose, spend a night and come out 10 years later with a purse that's always full of gold and a..."
"For once in your life, Matrim Coffin," she snapped. "Do not talk like a fool. You know very well Turangrial are not stories. It's the dangers you have to be aware of. Maybe the answers you seek are inside this one, but you must not try it before Moiraine says you can. You must promise me on that, or I promise you I will take you to her like a trout on a string. You know I can."
He gave a loud snort. "I'd be a fool if I did try it, no matter what Moiraine says. Walk into a bloody Turangrial? It's less I want to do with the bloody power, not more. You can blot it right out of your mind."
"It is the only chance I know, Matt."
"Not for me, it isn't," he said firmly. "No chance at all is better than that."
Despite his tone, she wanted to put an arm around him. Only he would likely make some joke at her expense and try to goose her. He had been incorrigible from the day he was born. But he had come to her for help.
"I'm sorry, Matt.
What will you do?
Oh, play cards, I suppose. If anyone will play with me. Play stones with Tom, dice in the taverns. I can still go as far as the city, at least. His gaze strayed toward a passing maidservant, a slender, dark-eyed girl, near his own age. I'll find something to take up time. Her hand itched to slap him, but instead she said cautiously, Matt, you really aren't thinking of leaving, are you? Would you tell Moiraine if I was? He put up his hands to forestall her. Well, there's no need. I told you I wouldn't. I'll not pretend I'd not like to, but I won't. Is that good enough for you? A pensive frown crept onto his face. Egwene, do you ever wish you were back home? That none of this had ever happened? It was a startling question, coming from him, but she knew her answer. No. Even with everything. No. Do you? I would be a fool then, wouldn't I? He laughed. It's cities I like, and this one will do for now. This one will do. Egwene, you won't tell Moiraine about this, will you? About me asking for advice and all?
Why shouldn't I? She asked suspiciously. He was Matt, after all.
He gave an embarrassed hitch of his shoulders. I've been keeping wider of her than I have of... Anyway, I've been staying clear, especially when she wants to root around in my head. She might think I'm weakening. You won't tell her, will you?
I won't, she said. If you promise me you will not go near that Tarangreal without asking her permission. I shouldn't even have told you about it.
I promise, he grinned. I won't go near that thing unless my life depends upon it.
I swear,
he finished with mock solemnity. Egwene shook her head. However much everything else changed, Matt just never would.